Welcome to the Chronic Podcast with host Ralph Malvro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of Hakeem Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No doubt.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his... I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malvro.
I don't take into account. All I take into account is they kicked our ass today. That's what I take into account.
All right, welcome to the Chronic Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They have 136 draft beers, Andrew. They have a 50-foot TV. I hope they have puke buckets.
It's too bad they don't have 137 beers.
They should. They need like a, I don't know. They have it all, though. They have your food, your beer, your liquor, because you need every ounce of it to survive this football season as it just gets more miserable. But
it sinks further into the abyss.
It does. But you got 5 weeks left of Saints football. You got LSU tomorrow, Thanksgiving. You got a bowl game for LSU. You got the college football playoff. You got a lot of reasons to go to the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court. They support us, so you should support them. All right, Andrew.
Wait, hold on. Are there any NFL games on Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
And none. So what's it with LSU playing on Thanksgiving Day? Are they competing with the NFL?
Yeah, they have college games on the NFL. The LSU and Texas A&M is going to be a new Thanksgiving Day tradition.
Yeah, I kind of hate that. I kind of liked when it was Arkansas on Friday.
The thing about the Friday game, though, is the crowd at LSU is just always terrible.
Yeah, very hungover. Yeah, that's true.
It's just like, it's like people are like, fuck, I'm full from Thanksgiving. I'd rather tailgate on Saturday. So, I mean, it's one thing. But, Andrew, the Saints are 4-7. I said in my column, they just exhaust me. I'm not going to pull form to lose because they're still in first place, but I find myself caring less and less if they win the division title. And I know that's horrible to say, and I hate the Saints for making me feel that way, but this team, they are fucking terrible on defense.
Yeah.
Are they Spags 2012 level? Because it looked to me like they were.
Well, I don't think it's so much. So Spags was a dumpster fire from minute one, and I think with this unit, it's kind of like they started off so bad. They started to improve a little bit, you know. And this defense has felt more like a one step forward, two steps back, more so than the Spags era where it was just, you know, two steps back followed by two steps back. But I think the difference is, I mean, I personally, you know, Pierre Warren makes a big play there, and that's really the only thing he did in that game. I thought he was a disaster at free safety. I thought his angles were terrible. I thought his tackling was atrocious. I thought his coverage, he was slow, you know, getting over to guys to help in coverage. So I just thought his head was swimming. He wasn't ready. And to me, Raphael Bush was sorely missed in that game. And I'm not saying that Forsett wouldn't have gashed the Saints, but a lot of those runs, Ralph, that were like 6 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, Raphael Bush, game over. You know how well he tackles. Those runs would have been done right then and there. Yeah. Instead, those runs that were normally 8 yards, 12 yards were going for 20 and 35. And so that to me was a big difference. And then you look at Broderick Bunkley, who's, in my opinion, the whole key to the Saints stopping the run is how he plays. He goes out, he's done, and now you got John Jenkins in there. So I think the attrition is really what's killed this team. I mean, now you're looking at Pierre Warren, who obviously is not a good last line of defense against the run, and now you've got John Jenkins, who's going to have to start and play a lot of reps at nose tackle. And all of a sudden, I just think because of the injuries now, you've got a defense that's not really capable of stopping the run.
There's and Andrew, you know, I'm sure there's some eggheads or people that are going to jump out and say, well, if he's on an NFL roster, he's NFL quality. But I'm just going to say it. Their secondary, from the first guy to, like, the dime guy, it's not NFL quality anymore.
You can always improve. You can always improve, and yeah. I think there's ways you can get better. I mean, tackling, to me, is still a basic thing. I mean, you still, like, if you have an opportunity to tackle a guy – That comes down to technique, and that comes down to being aggressive. And I think, once again, we're just seeing the Saints, the confidence in low and losing breeds losing. And it's one of those things where I think these guys are all pressing right now. And I think they're all trying to do too much as opposed to – you know, they're losing trust in the scheme. And when you lose trust in the scheme, you start doing things that you're not supposed to do. And then that's when the whole thing starts to blow up in your face.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, people may got on Vaccaro, but I think he made good points. I don't know if it was his comments this past week, but the week before, he's like, you know, as players, when you're in crisis and your defense is struggling, you almost have to be selfish in a sense of my job is to be in this gap or in this coverage. I'm supposed to be here. I'm going to be here. That's my job. The rest of you assholes, you need to be where you need to be. I'm not going to worry about you. I'm going to worry about me and what I have to do. And I thought that was really telling, and that I think you're right. I think I didn't feel like they quit, Andrew, because I felt like they came out in the second half and their energy on the line of scrimmage on defense was better.
I agree.
It was much better. I even tweeted. I was like, they're coming out, and they're like, this is our season. We got to win this game, and they're playing like it. And they did. But the problem is you can rah-rah, and you can scream, and you can get them, you can say get the crowd into it, and you can have all this emotion you want. But you got to stack good play after good play after good play, and they just can't.
Well, here's the thing, Ralph. If they had a good secondary – it's not like they got gashed the whole game, every single play. There were numerous plays that were made in the backfield. You know, there was Lofton had one, Akeem Hicks had one, John Jenkins had one, Marcus Ball had one. I mean, they hit those guys for losses occasionally. But what happens is your defense gets into 3rd and 8, 3rd and 11, and the other team is converting at will on these 3rd and long distances. And you start to lose focus, you know, and it's hard to continually stop the run against an offensive line like that, against the running back that, by the way, has had a great season. I mean, he was averaging 5.4 yards per carry coming in. So he was already playing really well.
Yeah.
But I think, Ralph, the biggest issue is that the pass defense is a culprit in that, too. I just think there were numerous times where they could have gotten off the field and – you know, Flacco had too much time. I mean, they would send guys blitzing and leave guys in a 1-1-1 coverage. And, you know, when you get a first down, then you have a whole new set of downs, and that's when they started breaking runs.
And the thing is, too, I mean, you know, we did the Rob Ryan big chart of defense last year, and, you know, one of the focuses was situational football and third down and distances and all that. But
well, they burned that to the ground yesterday.
The last 2 weeks, Andrew, opponents are converting 70%, 69.4 if you round, 69.4. We'll round up to 70.
I mean, they're not doing anything well right now defensively, yeah. Ralph. I mean, you look at it, you're giving up 70% of third downs. And a lot of these, I mean, you'll agree with me, a lot of these haven't been 3rd and inches and 3rd and 2s. They've been 3rd and 6 to 3rd and 14.
They're the spot you want to be in.
No, they're in the spot they want to be in. And so you look at Jeremy Hill – and you look at Forsett and you look at the yardage that they've put up, and your immediate thought is, well, they're not stopping the run. But then you look at all these down and distance and third downs where they could have had a chance to get off the field, and they're not doing that either. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think just purely looking at the rushing yardage isn't fair, because when you're giving up first downs, the offense is staying on the field, whereas if you get a stop there, they don't have a 1st and 10 or an opportunity to run the ball again because they have to punt.
Yeah. You know, and on Twitter, I argued back and forth with people. And as Andrew said before we started the podcast, I was angry and bitter last night. I was in like full doom, sadness, angry, bitter mode.
Yeah, but you're usually – I mean, you've got, you know, your doom side, Ralph.
Yeah.
So there's like the standard Ralph doom. This wasn't standard Ralph doom. This was – angry, depressed.
It was.
I burned it to the ground, Ralph.
I was arguing with the people that were coming at me saying they want to get rid of Drew Brees, but I can shut those people down. I just say, if you want to get rid of Drew Brees, fine. Give me a plan. Give me a name for a 2015 quarterback that has a 90 quarterback rating, and they shut up. But the thing that I was arguing with people is Rob Ryan. They like fire his ass. How much of this is his fault and how much of it is not? Because I've already mentioned
the injury. I think the biggest issue for this team, I've said it before, I'll say it again, Ralph, it's depth caused by the cap issues. The Saints just don't have great depth. They've been decimated at safety. They lose Jarris Byrd. They lose Raphael Bush. They lose Sinceri. Now they bring a guy who's starting that didn't even make the team, Ralph. They have to bring a guy back from off the street, from a practice squad, to come start on a week's notice. Yeah. That's how depleted they're now down to their fourth free safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think part of it's just this team had an unbelievable string of bad luck at free safety. But just in general, you look at the injuries, they're not set up, I think, to absorb these injuries like they have in the past.
Well, no team really is, though.
It's true. It's true. But I think if you look at 2009, I think if you look at some of the injuries they had, I mean, Zach Strief at right tackle was a backup. I mean, you look at Carl Nix came in for Jamar Nesbitt, who was the starter before him. You know, the Saints just had some real depth at some of these positions.
Yeah.
You know, where now, I mean, Bobby McCray was the third defensive end behind Charles Grant and Will Smith.
I would kill to have Bobby McCray.
Yeah, no, so I just think you look it's up true. And down the roster, the depth, you know, a lot of the guys that are backing up these starters are undrafted free agents, undrafted rookie free agents or guys that were undrafted rookie free agents a year ago. And I just think that part of that's just the cap situation. You invest in Jimmy Graham and Drew Brees. And so, you know, unfortunately, they've been hit by injuries and the guys that have come in just aren't good enough.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of happened to Atlanta last year, too. When you get to be an elite team and you have these elite players, you got to pay them, so you become sort of top heavy, and that's just the way it goes. And I think, you know, let's not overlook the fact that they went out and got Jarris Byrd, and yeah, he only played what three? He played three
four,
weeks,
right,
four. He played a month,
uh-huh.
And it wasn't really working out. But you know, I feel like they went into this year saying, you know what, we're going to be weak at corner, but we're going to be good at pass rush, and we're going to have kick-ass safeties. And they didn't even get a chance to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and Vaccaro is unrecognizable.
But I don't even – like he – to me, and I said this in last week's column – you know, we murdered Jenkins. We murdered Roman Harper. Vaccaro just sort of gets a pass.
He's worse. He's worse right now than Roman Harper and Malcolm Jenkins.
I don't even know. It's like, if he would have done this last year, we'd be like, it's a bust. He's a fucking train wreck bust. They should have just said pass on the pick. What is it?
He's said that the injury has limited him, you know, so it may take him a full year to fully recover. Maybe he's just not moving as well. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you look at Pro Football Focus, I think he had like the best tackle rate. He had like three missed tackles for the whole year. And this year he leads the NFL in missed tackles. I mean, that's unbelievable. It's just the difference there. It's a different player. But you know, I'm still hopeful that Vaccaro will be better next year. I think this year he's also playing in a different role. You know, you got to remember last year the strong safety was Roman Harper, and you know they had the luxury with Vaccaro to kind of put him in a position to succeed a lot of times. You know, he was kind of this rover safety slash. You know, sometimes he covers a tight end, sometimes he's in the slot. But I think a lot of times they put him in situational plays. Rob Bryan did. where it was easier for him maybe to succeed. Now that he's on the field kind of consistently as the strong safety, he's being asked to do more. And, you know, that I think maybe just with time and better health, he'll get better at that. But he's just not there right now, clearly.
This defense going forward, Andrew, we got 5 weeks left. They're still tied for first. So it pains us. You can't, you know, you can't just – if they were in any other division, you'd be like, fuck it, pull the plug. I would be. I'd be like, fuck it, pull the plug, just lose and get a top five pick and be done with it. But you can't because they're tied first. But they've got to at least they're not going to be 2013 because it's Thanksgiving, people. It just ain't happening. But they can't be what they were Monday. What is achievable in your mind going forward with the personnel that they have?
Well, we still have to remember that there's 5 games remaining and 3 are against NFC South opponents. And as bad as this 3-game landslide was at home, you got to remember they're still one play away from beating San Francisco. And we know San Francisco is a very tough football team.
Yeah.
I don't care what their record said before. And by the way, now they're starting to play a little better. But, you know, Cincinnati and the Ravens, in my opinion, you look at those offensive lines, you look at those defensive lines, they're just better than the Saints, top to bottom. They have better talent. They have better players. And they beat the Saints because they should be beating them, honestly.
Cincinnati's roster, they had a lot of injuries early in the year. They're getting healthy now. Their roster is loaded from top to bottom.
I mean, AJ Green is as good as it gets.
No, but I mean on defense, they people make fun of Mike Brown, the owner, because he's cheap, and he is. But they killed it in the Carson Palmer trade. They got a ton of picks, and they hit on them. And
they did. Yeah.
And their defense is – I mean they have guys that like – on their second and third team rotating defensive line that you would – the Saints people would kill for, like Frost Rucker and all. I mean, so –
Yep. So, I mean, you look at Cincinnati and the Ravens, I think the blessing in disguise here is, you know, Atlanta, Tampa, and Carolina. Those are teams that the Saints can absolutely compete with regardless of the state of their defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I firmly believe that this game in Pittsburgh is going to be a dumpster fire. I don't expect the Saints to do well in Pittsburgh. But you go to Chicago, I mean, that defense, that offensive line is really struggling. That defense is porous. You know, and Jay Cutler, you know, can always make bad decisions. So.
Put it this way, if Drew Brees goes to Chicago and he plays like he played last night, we'll get to him in a second. If Drew Brees gives them a B-plus game, they can win in Chicago. Now, it'll be down to the nub, drink a fifth of Crown, hope you have the ball at the end and get a touchdown or fall ass backwards into a late turnover or something. But it's winnable, but the same thing, all of these are losable.
Well, I think as a Saints fan, you go into these games, forget Chicago, forget Pittsburgh. They're both on the road. They're both going to be cold games. I think you rightfully expect us to lose those. Unless something crazy happens, which is, you know, it's the NFL. I mean, the Raiders beat the Chiefs this past week. So,
Tampa Bay went into Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so anything can happen. But I think unless something crazy happens, Pittsburgh and Chicago are going to beat the Saints. So you've got 3 games left. And against the NFC South, 2 of which are at home, 1 which is on the road against the weakest of those 3 teams. And so, you know, I think you just got to – the Saints have to go 3-0 in those games. If they go 3-0 in those games, they'll finish 7-9. They'll win the division.
They go 2-1, they might win. If they beat Carolina and Atlanta, they might 6-10 might do it.
Yep.
All right, let's get to – is there anything else on the defense? I feel like we've touched everything on the defense. I mean, they're just – you know, their secondary just can't function. They can't pass rush. I mean, the one thing I will say, I thought Junior Gallette played hard.
I agree.
Last night. I think
I thought he was the best. Him and Lofton were kind of the only two in my mind that really showed up.
And the thing is with Junior Gallette, that contract they gave him was a good thing. I think in the long term, it'll be a good thing. Because he's not going to get to 12 sacks, I don't think. But he's going to be a 9 to 12 sack guy the next couple of years. I think that contract was the right thing to do for him. He plays hard. He's better at home. That's fair. You know,
I think the bottom line is guys that get to the quarterback don't grow off trees.
No.
And if you can find a guy that can consistently get sacks, then you have to keep him.
Yeah. And they didn't overpay like that. he would have got that on the. I think he probably would have got that open market, maybe even a little bit more. You know, because
yeah, I agree.
You say it's crazy, but let me tell you something. If the Saints go 6-10 and host a playoff game, and they play the Cowboys, and Junior Gallette has 2.5 sacks and a strip fumble on Tony Romo, and they go to Arizona, let's say, and even if they get clobbered, if he gets another 2 sacks, teams are going to be like, hey, we'll give you $60 million. We just got Junior Gallette. Remember, he's the guy that kicked ass for the Saints in the playoffs. So,
right.
I mean, I think that contract looks okay. I mean, on offense, Drew Brees caught a lot of stuff on Twitter, but Andrew, I'm going to agree with you.
Ridiculous.
I thought he was – I mean, I can't say he was magnificent because the throw, the interception was a – you know, it was more of not a mental error, I think. It was just a bad physical throw. Besides that, dude was getting pressured. He was fantastic. And if not for him, the Saints have lost by 21.
Ralph, he was sacked 4 times. He was hit 8 times. I mean, I don't know. He was pressured on every play, pretty much. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
If the Saints went drop back to pass 49 times, when you drop back to pass 49 times and your offensive line is playing like that, I'm sorry, folks, but one interception is a miracle.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that he only turned the ball over one time, dropping back to pass 50 times against that pass rush. It is unbelievable that there was only one turnover. Now, it's unfortunate when it happened. 17 all. Saints are kind of driving. He throws that pick six, boom, game over.
Yeah.
But, you know, so again, that's timing. But everyone's saying, oh, well, he always throws interceptions at the worst times. There is no good time because he has no margin. It doesn't matter when he throws it. If he throws it, the game is over because he has to play perfect for the Saints to win.
Yeah, I think I don't know that you said this on Twitter. You might have said this when me and you were texting back and forth, but you equated it, and I thought it was a great analogy. You equated it to a baseball team that can't score, and they got Greg Maddux out there, and he's pitching great, and in the ninth inning, he gives up a 2-run homer, and you lose 2-1.
Yeah, he's got a no hitter going. He walks the first batter. You know, you got one out in the ninth, and he's got a no-hitter going, and then he gives up the 2-run shot. And it's the first hit, but it gives the team 2 runs, and now they're up 2-1. Now, he blew it in the ninth, but can you really blame the pitcher that your offense is so inept?
Yeah, I mean, and look, this offensive line, it was one of my main worries. You know, we got this season totally wrong, Andrew, in that we thought they were going to be magnificent going
well,
in.
Well, one thing I just want to say real quick, Ralph, about Brees, just to finish that thought, is I have been hard on him at times this year.
Yeah.
I've definitely thought there were games where he killed the team or he made mistakes. I mean, that Lions game, the interception there was just inexcusable. But if I'm talking about this game in particular, Brees, to me, this was arguably his best game of the year.
Yeah.
And I thought he was really good in Atlanta, but I thought this was probably right up there with the top 2 or 3 best games of the season.
Yeah.
And he was fantastic to me. I mean, the one play. I mean, you could look at maybe the pass to Jimmy Graham in the end zone where he throws it a little high. He missed that one. But other than that, I mean, he was pretty much perfect for the entire day.
Yeah. Speaking of – well, I wouldn't say perfect, but Joe Morgan is back, baby. He had the reverse. He had the bomb. You know, what's his role going to be going forward, Andrew? And it's interesting to me is through all of Joe Morgan's injuries and trials and tribulations, the Saints, they've never let him go. And that, you know, you can criticize him for not playing him, but there's something there that the Saints say, we got to keep him. Because I'm telling you, Andrew, if they would have cut him, he'd be on another team right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things with Morgan where you look at how well Colston played, you look at how well Stills played in that game, and I really do think when you hit on those plays a couple times with one guy, it opens up, it allows you to stretch the field.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, anytime he's running a flag route or a deep route, the high safety has to pay attention to that. And that pulls not only because he's going to beat the corner in a straight line race. And so all of a sudden that pulls the safety away and it opens up the middle of the field. And so I think a lot of times, you know, Brees would take shots down the field. He would miss. And, you know, you look at how the early season progressed. these safeties maybe weren't that terrified to go let a corner go one-on-one with some of these receivers, whether it was Stills or Brandon Cooks. And so obviously Morgan, for whatever reason, is just able to make those explosive plays. And I think it – I mean, you just watch the game. I thought it helped the offense that he hit those two big plays early.
He's one of those guys that – and it's amazing because he's blown out his knee twice. I think he's blown out each knee or the same knee. I forget.
Yeah, twice, yeah.
But he's one of those guys, and they're rare, where you just look at him. And Devery Henderson was like that too. It's like, fuck, that guy's fast, even by NFL standards. Henderson, when he was at his peak, he just ran by corners. And the thing about Devery Henderson too is – teams would play the cover too, and he would just outrun both the over the top coverage.
Yeah, it's funny because I think if you did like 40 times between Cooks and Morgan, I think Cooks would arguably beat him in just a straight 40 yard dash race. But I think his style of running, you know, I mean, Cooks can get jammed at the line, or you know, a corner can get a hand on him and kind of stay with him just by kind of getting a little contact, whereas. And Cooks is a little more shifty, you know, he takes smaller steps, whereas Joe Morgan just has that long stride. And once he gets going, I mean, you can see it's hard for these guys to stay with him.
Yeah.
You know, the big disappointment, I think, with Morgan, despite those two big plays, is that he got caught from behind on both. Because obviously, you know, we know what happened after the end of round.
Yeah. Going into the year, we said, look, I thought one of the big concerns, besides the hole at corner, which turned out to be true, was, you know, you just worry about this offensive line getting up in age.
Yeah.
How much of this offensive line, Andrew, is decline, and how much of it is Cincinnati and Baltimore are really good?
I mean, I can't really speak for Cincinnati because they've really struggled against the run this year. So
yeah.
But I mean, the Ravens are one of the best front sevens I've seen this year. I mean, I'll say this. See, I mean, we know Haloti Ngata is awesome.
Yeah.
We know that Elvis Dumervil and Terrell Suggs are terrifying. Mm-hmm. But what really impressed me in that game was CJ Mosley. I mean, that dude was dominant. And, I mean, as a front seven, I mean, I talked to Goodwin about this. You know, there is solid of a front seven as they've played. I mean, just a really good front seven. And, you know, it's one of those things where the Saints aren't going to play a front seven that good.
Yeah. The rest of the offense, I thought Kenny Stills was good. I thought they overcame, you know, Brandon Cooks being out. I mean, I like Brandon Cooks. I think he's going to be really good, but I don't think they miss him that much. I thought Jimmy Graham did. I mean, Baltimore did okay against him, but Jimmy Graham had his moments.
I don't know. I thought Will Hill played actually a phenomenal game against Graham.
Yeah.
I mean, he got beat occasionally, but I think overall, I thought he outplayed Jimmy Graham in that game.
This offense, we got a couple of questions, and then we'll get to the NFC South, and we'll get a game preview because me and Andrew have to get out of here. Mandela says, why does the rest of the NFC work so hard to keep our hope? The NFC South work so hard to keep our hopes up while the season is over.
Well, that's the crazy thing about this is that the season's not over. And look, I know it seems ridiculous to talk about playoffs because this really is unprecedented. I think it's weird for the team to be continually losing games three in a row.
This, Andrew, is the garbage version of Halley's Comet. It's like the comet that comes around like once every 85 years. The 2014 NFC South is the garbage version of Halley's Comet.
Right.
It's only going to come around once in a lifetime. You got to enjoy it.
It's the first time in NFL history that a team three games under 500 is in first place. And it might be the first time in NFL history next week that a team four games under 500 is in first place.
Yeah.
But, no, look, I think when we think about all this and how the season's played out, they're still just tied for first place. And I think as a fan, like, look, I might live to regret this if they win the division and they go to the playoffs, they host the first game, and let's say Seattle comes in and wins by 30 points. Sure,
yeah.
I'm probably going to live to regret this, but I think in the back of my mind, I still think you get in and anything can happen in one game, especially if you're at home. And so I'm going to keep rooting for them to win the division until it's done.
And the thing is, people are saying, look, I want to, you know, I would rather, if you go 6-10 and you win a division, you pick 21st. If you go 6-10 and lose the division, you pick 10th. I'd rather pick 10th. Look, I'm never rooting for a draft pick over a playoff spot, because then what's the point? But I get it. People are getting frustrated. It's pathetic. And
Ralph, I don't buy the promise of a better draft pick.
Yeah, exactly.
Meaning more wins down the road.
Who
would you rather have? Cedric Ellis or Brandon Cooks? Would you rather have?
Jonathan Sullivan or Vaccaro? Well, that's kind of, I mean, at this moment, that's.
Hey, Vaccaro's already had a better career than Sullivan.
That is true. You know, so, and look, it's an extra week of football. That's what I want.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's funny with the NFC South, and we have a friend of mine on Twitter. We've had him on the Dave Schoat from the Falcoholic. I said with him, I think it was like 5 or 6 weeks ago, I was like, December 21st, baby, 5-10 Saints, 5-10 Falcons. Who gets to 6 and wins the NFC South? And it's been a joke with me and him all year long. And last night, he finally tweeted, he's like, forecast has been saying this for 6 weeks, that 5-10 Saints, 5-10 Falcons, December 21st, I think it's going to happen. I was like, damn right it's happening. It's happening. Saints, Falcons, December 21st for everything. I think it's happening.
I mean, if you look at how bad these teams have played, if you just look at how awful they've been, and you consider the fact that they're both 4-7 right now, I don't see how in your right mind you can think that they end with a winning record out of these last five. So based on that alone, I think 2-3 is kind of the best case scenario for all these teams, only because they play each other.
Yeah.
And so 6-10 probably gets it done. Now it's got to be the right two. You know, if it's for the Saints, you got to beat Carolina and Atlanta. But if you get the right two, 6-10 will do it.
Yeah, and you look at Atlanta's schedule, host Arizona, go to Green Bay, host Pittsburgh, go to the Saints, host Carolina. I mean, that's a brutal schedule for them.
Yeah.
Carolina might not be out of this either. I mean, they go to Minnesota this week.
No one's out of it. No Tampa's not out of it.
You know, and I'll say this.
You got to do is win one.
And I'll say this for Atlanta. I know people are like, Arizona's going to crush them. Arizona's defense might crush them. But the thing you need to just own Atlanta is you need either A, competent quarterback, or B, to be able to run the ball. Cleveland had one of those. They ran the ball down Atlanta's throat. Hoyer's horrible. So Cleveland couldn't finish off Atlanta. Arizona cannot run the ball. And Drew Stanton might be fucking terrible. So that might be and Arizona's only favored by 2, and Vegas usually gets those things right. So that's
I mean, the only thing I'm going to say about that, though, is, I mean, you're not giving enough credit to Atlanta's just will to find ways.
Yeah, dude, I would say –
I mean, that's a completely different thing from the Saints right now, where the Saints are just god-awful and getting dumb-trucked. I mean, Atlanta is literally finding different ways to lose.
They won two in a row, but bookended it with two horrific losses. One to Detroit, where they were winning up. They were up 21-0, I think.
20-0 at half.
20-0. Yeah. And 21. Yeah, 20-0. And then this loss to Cleveland. I don't know who it was in the Falcoholic, but they wrote the best piece of satire for football I've read all year. They said Mike Smith is really Sacha Baron Cohen, and he's just been running a prank. And he was like, I thought I'd get fired before this, guys, but you know,
I got to keep it going.
Yeah, just go there and read it. It's phenomenal. So yeah, I mean, they've been playing great, but they've been playing. You know, these last three they played bad. You know, Cleveland's up. They're 7-4, but I don't think Cleveland is. Cleveland is kind of the Saints with a little bit better injury luck and better in close and more luck in close games. That's what the difference is. But we'll see. I mean,
Ralph, I know you're an angry. So look, I just want to throw one thing out there real quick.
What is that?
When you watch the Steelers game this weekend, remember Le'Veon Bell ran for over 200 yards against the Titans. This doesn't bode well for the Saints. They're going to be embarrassing. They're going to lose. They're going to be 4-8. The whole fan base is going to want to set everything on fire again. But I want you to remember one thing. there's still three NFC South games left. Those are the ones that matter. Yeah. So when they get dump trucked by Pittsburgh, don't sweat it too hard, because there's three games that matter, and that's not one of them.
So really the game that matters this weekend is not the Saints game. The game that matters the most is Atlanta and Arizona, because Atlanta's at home and they have a better chance to win than the Saints. So what you're saying is after the Saints get dump trucked at 325, just take a really stiff drink and root for the Cardinals.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, all right, so let's get to you know, let's get to the Pittsburgh game.
It's over.
I mean,
you don't even need to watch it.
We're gonna watch it.
Oh yeah, well, I'll watch it, but I'm just telling you right now, the Saints are not gonna win that game.
I mean,
I guarantee. I'm on here on this podcast right now, and I guarantee you that the Saints will lose.
What will you do on the podcast if the Saints win, Andrew? Because that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, I feel like I have to do a Buddy D wear a dress type thing.
Well, like, it's audio, so that doesn't help the people. Well, you could get your wife.
Yeah, what do you want me to do? You want me to sing like It's Raining Men, or?
Yeah, I want you, if the Saints win, I want you to sing It's Raining Men. That's
okay.
It's a good one.
I'm in.
So,
and I will sing it gloriously.
You will. That would be so 2014 Saints. The ultimate 2014 Saints move would be to go to Pittsburgh.
Three straight home losses.
Go to Pittsburgh. Look
in the snow.
In the rain, in the snow, in the whatever. Look fucking fantastic. Get to 5-7. Atlanta loses. Everybody's like, oh, it's in the bag. Carolina goes to Minnesota, gets house. Everybody's like, it's in the bag. We're going to beat Carolina, get to 6-7. We're going to practically have this shit wrapped up. And then shit the bed against Carolina at home. That would be the ultimate 2014 Saints move. But it's not happening because, dude, Pittsburgh, they have they go four deep at wide receiver. They got Antonio Brown and Wheaton and
Ralph. They have great receivers. That's fine. If I watch the tape and I'm Pittsburgh, I do not throw one pass. I know Roethlisberger is a good quarterback. I do not throw one pass the entire game. Not one.
Yeah. I wouldn't – if I was Pittsburgh, I wouldn't throw the ball, Andrew, until I was in a third and less than four.
Right, exactly.
You know,
you mean third and more than four?
Yeah, third and more. Like,
yeah, because then it's automatic.
Because
yeah.
if until I get to third and five, I'm not throwing. And you know, I think the problem the Saints will have is I think it'll be like Baltimore. They'll be hit and miss in the run game because they'll have to sell out so much, and Pierre Warren's just going to be atrocious, taking bad angles here, bad angles there. You know, they'll get a stop. They'll stuff him for two, hit him behind the line for one, and then he's going to rip off a 40-yarder. Like it's.
Yep.
But I'm going to say, I said in my column, I didn't write a
pre-note. Le'Veon Bell is much scarier than Jeremy Hill and Forsett. I can promise you that.
I didn't do a preview column. I just did a quick pick. I said, Ben Roethlisberger throws for 400, Steelers run for 200 more. The Saints are 4-8, but they'll still be in first place in the South.
The over under for Le'Veon Bell in rushing yards, I'm setting at 150.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The only thing that gives me hope is the Steelers have lost to Tampa at home and they lost to the Jets. And they have a historic thing under Mike Tomlin when they play bad teams of playing shitty. That's my only hope. And Andrew, this is the Saints are just a garden variety crap team. And
I would also bet my mortgage that Lance Moore is going to find the end zone.
Oh, definitely. My theory on crap teams, Andrew, is when they play at home, they can be feisty like the Saints were against Baltimore, and they fell behind, but they keep fighting. But my theory on crap teams on the road is if you can put the foot on them early, they'll just fold up. And you can cruise. And I think it's going to be the same thing with this Steeler game. You're going to know with about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter, like, if the Saints have any shot at all.
I agree.
You know? Because what will happen is either the Saints will come out and score and it'll be like 7-3, and maybe, you know, maybe the Saints score and Pittsburgh kicks a field goal and you're like, oh, it's 7-3, or maybe, you know, the Saints jump up like 10-0 or 14-0 because they fall into a turnover. Then you're like, ah, that's good. But if Pittsburgh goes down and score, Saints go 3-0 and it gets to like 10 or 14-0, you can just, it's done. So I think you'll know how it's going to go 10 minutes in. But, Andrew, before we get out of here, we said all year – Dave said all year that, you know, it's going to be 10 wins to the South. That ain't happening.
What a joke that is. And, well, now that's mathematically impossible, officially.
It's mathematically impossible. So 8-8 is still possible, 7-9. Is 6-10 going to win this division?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to end up being 6-10, but I think two teams will have 6 wins. So, you know, whether that's Carolina at 6-9-1, or, you know,
if they get to 6, it favors them.
Yeah,
But they've got to go 3-2 the rest of the way.
Right. So, I mean, I just think whoever wins the division will have 6 wins. I don't think you can expect the Falcons or Saints to do any better than 2-3. Through these next 5. So I think it'll be 6 wins, but I think two teams or maybe even 3 will be tied with 6 wins. So I think it'll come down to tiebreakers, but I think 6 wins will put somebody in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got his grades and other fun stuff. Dave couldn't make it. Kevin's on duty in St. Louis with all the crisis in Ferguson, unfortunately. So we'll see you Sunday. Follow us.
Wait, you're gonna do a prediction for me in MVP?
I did 42-21. The MVP, I guess, will be Le'Veon Bell or Ben Roethlisberger or Lance Moore or whoever.
Well, you got to pick one.
I'll say Bell. I mean, okay. But then again, I haven't gotten the Saints right all year long, Andrew. I just don't know. I just can't figure. The thing is, I can't figure out a way for the Saints to win this game because Drew Brees could play like he played against Baltimore and not have the pick six, and it might not be enough. To me, Andrew, the absolute best case scenario for the Saints. Remember that game they played in Green Bay in 2012?
Yes.
Where
Sproles ran the punt back.
No. The 2012, that was 2011 when they played.
The one where they lost on a field goal.
Yeah, they lost because Hartley made the field goal, but then they had a penalty and he missed it.
Right.
To me, that's the absolute best case. And even if Hartley would have made that field goal, Green Bay still would have had 90 seconds left to drive down. Like, that's the best case scenario. Like, Drew Brees has to play fucking lights out perfect, and it's still – it's even if Drew Brees plays lights out perfect, it's still a coin flip.
Yep, I'm saying 31-17 Steelers, and I'm gonna say Le'Veon Bell does all the hard yards, you know, the hard work. He rushes for over 200 for the second consecutive week, but Lance Moore will score 2 touchdowns. I'll give it to Lance Moore.
Will the Saints still be tied for first?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say the Falcons lose. I'm going to say Carolina loses in Minnesota. Who does Tampa play?
That's a good question. Tampa Bay Buccaneers schedule.
Come on, you don't have this memorized?
No, I don't have it. I don't. They play Cincinnati?
All right, I'm going to go on a crazy whim here. I'm going to say that Tampa is the lone NFC South team to win this weekend.
God, if they beat Cincinnati, they'll be feeling fucking awesome.
Yep.
And the thing is with Tampa is they play competitive, but they find a way to lose because their quarterback's atrocious.
Yep. But
those two receivers, if the Saints have to go to Tampa and win the final week, it's going to be a nightmare because Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson are going to eviscerate them.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, go to SaintsNation.com. For Andrew, I'm Ralph. See you next week. And I don't know, this season it's just a death spiral. Just
good luck.
I don't take into account. All I take into account is they kicked our ass today. That's what I take into account.